Welcome to the first episode of Just For Today podcast. I'm Adriana and I created this space so we can have real, raw, and unfiltered conversations about things that most people would shy away from. This is going to be a place where we talk about the messy, the uncomfortable, the stigmas, and all the things that we're told to keep quiet about, like grief. When I started sharing my grief after Eric died on my social medias, I was expecting hate. I know everyone on the internet cannot be nice. I know about keyboard warriors. I knew about all that. But I was honestly so surprised at the amount of comments and messages I received saying that I should not be grieving in public, that my grief should be a private matter and I shouldn't be doing it for the world to see. But I disagree. I found sharing my grief was actually really healing because I found so many of you that were going through grief and similar situations, and it made me feel so much less alone. Other things we'll be talking about on here will be addiction, life after loss, depression, mental health, suicide, because the truth is, ignoring these topics doesn't just make them magically go away. It just makes people feel so alone in their life, in their troubles, in their traumas, and all their problems. I've been there. I don't like it. I don't want to go back. I don't want you to be there. I don't want my kids, our kids. I don't want anyone to be in a state of loneliness. Now, here's a little backstory on the name behind the podcast. As some of you may know, I lost my husband, Eric, 2 years ago to an accidental overdose. He did struggle with addiction for a lot of his adult life. He did go through a few withdrawals in the years that we were together, which led to detoxes. And during those detoxes, the last few days and weeks after that were the hardest for him. I often caught him saying this one quote, and it was just for today. And when I asked him about it, he said that it was something they learn in NA, and it's called the Just For Today meditation. And essentially what it is you're telling yourself, we live this life one day at a time, just for today. So that's how you'd tackle sobriety, is one day at a time. Because telling yourself that you can't have something ever again for the rest of your life is very intimidating. So the way they tackle addiction and sobriety is one day at a time. So I would catch him saying, just for today, I'm not gonna get high. Just for today, I'm not going to drink. Just for today, I'm going to stay clean. And tomorrow, I'll wake up, and if I'm still craving, I'll deal with it tomorrow. Tomorrow would come, same thing. Just for today, I'm committing just for today not to do this, not to do that. And that mindset helped him so much. Now, after he died, I was struggling. I was struggling big time with my mental health. I did not want to live. I contemplated suicide every single day, multiple times a day for the first few months. And one day I was going through our desk and I found his AA book, and there was a piece of paper in the middle of the book. So I opened up to it and it was a paper that he had written just for today on. Now at that moment, it was something I needed to see because I was going through one of those really dark, just dark places in my mind where I didn't want to be here. You know, I was ready. I was ready to go. And then I saw that. So I took that as a sign from Eric to just keep going just for today. So after I found that, whenever I would get in those dark places in my head, or you know, started telling myself that I no longer wanted to live and all this stuff, I would follow it up with, just for today. I'm going to stay here just for today. I am going to continue to live for my children just for today. And tomorrow, if I still feel like I no longer want to be here, I'll deal with it tomorrow. And essentially that quote saved my life because I continued to stay just for one more day, and telling myself that I just had to live without him for one more day instead of the rest of my life was not as intimidating, and it was so helpful. So that is why this show is called the Just for Today podcast. Now let me give you a little background story on my life, who I am, who Eric was, and all that fun stuff. Eric and I met April of 2017. I was living in Arizona with two of my cousins, and we really liked to party. So we would throw house parties every weekend, sometimes all weekend long. And one night, my cousin was throwing a party, and I hear a knock on the door, and I open the door, and I didn't really know all of her friends, so I kind of just like opened the door, and I was like, come on in. And there was Eric standing with his best friend and his roommate at the time, Connor. So they looked at me and Eric was like, hey, we're the neighbors. We just moved in a couple houses down and we saw all the cars outside. So we thought we'd come over and introduce ourselves. And they had like a bottle of vodka or something. So, you know, we're like, all right, come on in. Eric used to tell this story about how it was a love at first sight for him. Like the second I opened the door, he remembered what I was wearing. When he proposed to me, he even mentioned like the second I saw you in that little gray dress, I knew I was in love. Like this was it. Still have that little gray dress in my closet and I don't think I will ever be able to get rid of it now. So yeah, they came over. Eric ended up staying for maybe 20 minutes. I don't even think that long. And he was like, I have to go. I work in the morning. So his roommate stayed. His roommate stayed for longer than that. And then, you know, whatever, the night ended. I used to run every day. I was actually in shape. I used to run every single day. And we lived in a cul-de-sac. And our house was closer to the end of the cul-de-sac. So in order to get out of the street, I obviously had to run by his house. I would go running every single day. And he would also tell the story about how I probably wasn't even a runner. I would just go running every day to get his attention because he was always outside, which is not true. I was a runner. But it, you know, it didn't hurt that he was out there and I got to talk to him every day when I would go running. Eventually, we all became really close, me and my two cousins and him and Connor. We all just became a group of besties. Like, we were always in and out of each other's houses, whether Eric wasn't home and Connor was, like, I would just go in and hang out with Connor. Connor would come hang out with my cousins. Eric would come hang out with my cousins when I was at work. It was just such a fun relationship. All five of us were like inseparable that entire summer. I did play a little hard to get because I just was having fun in life and I wasn't really looking for anything serious. But eventually, and when I say eventually, it really didn't take long. It was like 2 months. Eric and I started dating, and I asked him if he wanted to move in almost immediately. So he ended up moving in with us, and we met in April. I think he moved in July, and we literally started trying to have a baby in August. So we were just like, bam, 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 get it all out of the way. Get it all out of the way. And the rest is history. That's how we became a we. Now, a question I get a lot is, did I know that Eric was an addict when I first started dating him? And the answer is yes, I did. But I was very naive to addiction, so I did not understand the depths of addiction and the control it has over someone. Now, when I met Eric, he was clean, he was not using, and he did not relapse until years after we were dating. The first relapse was tough and probably the longest one because I didn't know anything. I had no idea about what was going on and why he was acting certain ways. Like, I knew something was off, but I didn't know what it was. Once I figured it out and we went through a detox and all that, then it was kind of hard to miss the signs. So I quickly learned how to spot it. Now, within the 5 years, 6 years we were together, I want to say that he was only actively using for about 10 to 12 months. But after the first relapse, we did struggle for the remainder of his life, because if you love an addict, or if you've ever loved an addict or dated an addict or been married to an addict, it's really hard to trust after the first time, especially because when they are in the depths of addiction, they will lie to basically continue to do what they think they have to do. So we did struggle with our marriage. I mean, in between all these years too, we had 3 kids back to back to back. Also, in the beginning, after his first relapse, I took everything very personally. I was questioning myself, my worth, my children's worth, and I'd constantly be like, why don't you love us enough to stop? Why are you doing this? Why don't you love us? And I think that is something that happens to a lot of people that don't actually understand addiction. And I think this is why it is so often judged, because people just assume, like, if you didn't want to do it, you wouldn't do it. And it's not that easy. I mean, going through it all and seeing something like that take over someone you love, they become powerless. And I quickly learned that it had nothing to do with me. It had absolutely nothing to do with me. And once I realized that, and I realized, we are not on opposite teams. We're on the same team. He's my teammate. He needs me. He needs my help. It was an easier mindset. It wasn't an easy mindset. It was still hard as fuck, and we fought, and we had, it was hard, but it was an easier mindset knowing that it had nothing to do with me. So I think being educated in addiction is something we can all kind of try to do, because believe it or not, you will meet someone in your lifetime that is an addict or has struggled with these things. Not all addicts look the same. There's very successful people that fall into addiction. There's children that fall into addiction. They have a surgery. They get Vicodin. They get prescribed all this medication, and that's the start of it for them. Or I know women who have had a C-section, and they've been prescribed Oxy, and before you know it, they're fentanyl addicts. Like, it does not discriminate. And I wish people were more open to learning about it before life humbles them and has someone in their life go through the same thing. When Eric was alive, his addiction was not something we shared, even before I was in the picture. It was just his parents and his siblings and his like closest best friends that knew that he had a problem when he relapsed. When we were together, his family, I did tell his mom and his siblings and his best friends. So really, it was really just a tight-knit circle of people that knew. Towards the end of his life, the last time he was in deep active addiction, I remember him telling me how he wishes he could just shout it from the rooftops because he hates how it feels just hiding everything and feeling like he can't talk about things without feeling judged. Now, I was so used to being alone in this situation and not talking to people about it or not, you know, it not being out in the open. So I was lonely. I struggled really bad. It drained me. And I didn't realize how bad, I didn't realize how draining it was until I was out of it. And I know there's so many other people that are in the same situation and they don't know what to do, or they feel like they're the only ones in that place. And I just want them to know that they're not. You're not alone. You're not crazy. You're just fighting for your person and for your love. And I don't think that's a bad thing, but you also have to know to set strict boundaries and protect yourself, because you can't save someone that doesn't want to be saved, and you will lose yourself in the process. After Eric died, no one really knew about his addiction or how he died. Nobody knew how he died. My parents had found out the day of his death. And that was only because I was at their house. I was at their house when I found out, and I'm frantically on the phone with the hotel yelling like, he's an addict, he's dead, get in the room, this and that. And my parents were like, who are you talking about? So that's how they found out. And we were living with them for like a year prior to that, when he was really deep in his addiction, and they had no idea. So when I tell you that Eric was a very high-functioning addict, he was extremely high-functioning. I mean, he ran his own business. He made really good money. He was an amazing father. And, you know, that was one of the comments I got once I shared that he was an addict and that he did die of an accidental overdose. Someone said, how could he be an amazing father when he was an addict? And I didn't even give that question the time of day, because those are the type of people that are so judgmental and they just give me the ick. And I just hope you never have to deal with that in your life, because man, you judgy people suck. You just suck. That's it. That's all I have to say about that. Anyone that knows Eric knows he was the absolute best fucking dad ever. Like, he was the best dad. He would do absolutely anything for his kids. People like my family, my cousins, my aunts and uncles that didn't even know he was struggling with this addiction were all shocked because of how amazing he was, and always in such a good mood, always laughing, always smiling, always trying to make you laugh, always trying to make you feel good. He had the biggest heart ever. We'd see homeless people on the street. He'd get out of the car and give them blankets. Like, he'd keep blankets in his truck and he'd give homeless people blankets. He'd give them food. He'd give them money. Like, he was the sweetest man ever. Best dad, best husband. And his demons just couldn't fight them, couldn't fight his demons. Sorry, back to what I was saying. Nobody knew he was an addict. I was planning on keeping it that way. I was never planning on telling my kids. I was like, there's absolutely no way I'm going to tell my children, because I was terrified. I, number one, didn't want my kids to become addicts themselves. And I was so afraid that if I told them that their dad was an addict, it would be so easy in their mind to be like, well, dad did this drug, so why can't I? And it still is a very big fear. And I think it always will be. Another thing was, I don't ever want them to feel like he chose drugs over them, which, again, I'm sure they are going to feel at least one time in their life. Or when they get older and they're in school and they tell children, they tell other kids how their dad died. Kids are so mean. I'm sure they're going to hear the, oh, your dad didn't love you, your dad chose this, or blah, blah, blah. Like, I already know what's going to happen, and it kills me. It kills me because it is not true. It's the furthest thing from the truth. And those kids were his entire world. And I'm just so thankful that I have all the pictures and videos and memories, and our family that surrounds us has all the memories that they will be able to tell my children for the rest of their life, that proves how good of a dad Eric was. So those were the two main reasons why I did not want to tell my kids. I'm honestly just terrified that they will go down the same path. I even went to the extreme of calling a really good family friend who's an attorney, and I said, please, please, can you like just make this autopsy go away? Make this autopsy go away. I don't want anyone to be able to see it. I don't want anyone to be able to order it and see that he died of an overdose. Like, what can we do? And, you know, nothing. We can't do anything. We can try, but he nicely was like, I'll try, but basically we can't do anything. Also, my kids were so young that they never really asked me any questions. I mean, Emmy was 4.5, Jax was 2.5, Riley was 14 months. So I was so worried about it. And, you know, like, I even remember my dad was like, that's not something you have to worry about right now. They're so young. I didn't have to worry about it because they didn't ask me questions. As, you know, time went on, if someone would ask me, I would say that he died of a cardiac arrest. And the reason I said that was because ultimately when you die, you go into cardiac arrest. So I would say that, and people would ask me like, oh, how, like what caused it? How did he go into cardiac arrest and all this stuff? And I just wouldn't answer. But it made me feel better because in my mind I was like, I'm technically not lying. You know, like I'm not saying he had a heart attack. I'm not saying this, that. I was just going with cardiac arrest. And honestly, other than people on social media, no one ever asked me. No one in person, cousins, aunts, no one asked me. And then I got to the point where I want to say it was after a year, after the first death-iversary, angel-iversary, I guess, whatever you want to call it. After the first year is when I slowly started getting more into detail with people who would DM me. Random people would DM me on Instagram and be like, oh, how did your husband die, or what happened to him? And there was just one point when I was like, you know what? Fuck it. Like, I don't know you. You don't know me. I'm just going to tell you the truth. So I just started responding with, you know, my husband died of an accidental overdose. And oh my God, 99% of the responses were, oh my gosh, like my brother's an addict. My husband, that's how my husband died. I know like my brother-in-law, my cousin, my sister, my this, my that, my dad, like so many people knew someone that was either struggling with addiction or died of an overdose. And I found so much healing in those conversations. because I was not the only one. And I was so afraid to tell people what really happened. And I remember there was a few people too that I had like previous messages from on Instagram that I didn't see, but they messaged me again, like asking how my husband died. And I scrolled up to see their previous messages and they'd be like, oh, I just lost my husband too, or I lost my husband a few months ago, also to a cardiac arrest and all this stuff. And then afterwards, after I told them how Eric really died, they'd be like, oh my God, me too. So I just hate that we all felt so ashamed to have to hide it, because that doesn't make our person any less than what they really were. If we could all just speak freely and really talk about our problems and share without the fear of judgment, like how great would this world be? Seriously, literally, like how great would it be? I'm so tired of the stigma. I'm done hiding it. I am so done hiding it. I'm so done letting this be a weight on me that I just feel like I can't get out underneath from. Like, I am so done with this being something that I feel like is holding me back from so much and has such control over me and my emotions. And then one day I received a message from someone, and she was a little older than me, and she said, you know, I don't know why I feel the need to tell you this, but I just feel like something is pulling me to tell you this. And she shared with me how her dad died when she was 5. So 40 years ago, her dad died of a heroin overdose, and her mom told her that it was a heart attack, and she did not find out the truth until she was in high school. And after she found out, she was so ashamed, she didn't even start telling people up until recently that this is how her dad actually died. When I read that message, you know, I don't know if she felt some type of way towards her mom for not telling her the truth. Like, we didn't really get into that. But just knowing that she still feels ashamed 30, 40 plus years after her dad died of saying how he died, it hurt my heart for her. I don't want my kids to be like that. I want to talk about it so much with them that they understand that addiction is a disease. Their dad did not choose this. He had a disease and he lost. He lost his battle with this disease. And I know growing up, they're going to get so much backlash for that, but I am just hoping to raise them to be some strong ass kids that will A, stand up for themselves, stand up for others, stand up for their dad, and not be afraid. So in order to do that, I have to be honest with them. That was when I decided that there will be no secrets. There will be just open communication between me and my kids, and whatever they want to know, they deserve to know. Obviously in a very age-appropriate way. You know, I'm not going to just like spill everything because they don't understand. They're so young. And coincidentally, a few days after I received that message, for the first time since Eric died, Emmy asked me how he died. And she, you know, we were just like talking, and she's like, but how did Dad die? Like, how did his body stop working? Like, was he sick? What was wrong? And in my head, I'm like, oh shit, here we go. Here we go. So I told her. I explained it to her. I explained the disease of addiction. I explained to her in a very age-appropriate way. And she didn't say much afterwards. I know it was kind of a lot for her to take in. And I didn't push the conversation because I don't ever want to make her feel like I am making her talk to me or just making her be in a conversation or a situation that she does not want to be a part of. Like, I've established so much trust and openness with all my children that they do come to me when they have questions and when they want to know something. And she has a few times since that day. She's randomly come up to me and asked me certain questions about drugs and addiction. And it's just nice knowing that when she's only six, but it's nice knowing that she feels comfortable enough to come to me and ask me these things. And I hope she feels like that for the rest of her life. So I will continue to be open with her for the rest of her life, so she feels like she has someone. Now, as she gets older, obviously she's going to have more questions, you know, especially like in her teenage years or once they're, you know, like drugs come into play, she will have more questions, and hopefully I'll be here to answer them for her the best way that I can. But for now, we are just doing the best we can. I also feel like this is what Eric would want. I don't think he would ever want me to lie to our children. We've always talked about how we wanted to raise our kids and how we wanted to be close with them. And we never wanted to be those parents that, you know, they're like, oh, shoot, I can't tell mom or dad. Like, I'm going to get in trouble. You know, like, we always wanted to have a really good relationship with them. And I honestly feel like right now I have it. And I'm really thankful for that. And I know Eric's proud of me. I know that's what he would want. And I also got some backlash about this podcast because, you know, people were like, he's not here, like, to tell a story. Like, it's kind of not fair that you're just, like, airing out his dirty laundry. And I'm not airing out his dirty laundry. I am speaking my truth. I love Eric so much. I would have had his back over and over and over again. I mean, that man was my ride or die. I know he knows that. I know he knows how much I loved him. I know he knows that I would have never left his side. And I know that. And that's all I need. I also feel like I am the one that went through so much struggle with him. I also know where Eric's heart was, and I know he has a pure soul and loves to help people. So if his story, my story, our story can help anyone out there struggling and make them feel less alone, I know he's okay with that, because the loneliness he felt was overbearing, and he wouldn't want anyone to go through that. So if you ever feel like you're going through something just too big to handle, whether it's addiction, mental health, or just the way of life, I see you, and I really hope this podcast helps you. You don't have to have it all figured out. You don't have to know what tomorrow is going to look like. You just have to make it through today. Thank you so much for being here with me today. If this episode resonated with you, please share it with someone who you think might need to hear it. I also want to know what you guys want to hear more about on this podcast. Any other topics, anything else, stigmas, whatever it may be, how uncomfortable it may be, leave it in the comments and I will do my best to deliver. If you want to continue to be a part of these conversations, make sure to subscribe. I will see you guys next time. Until then, remember, just for today, keep going.